How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, the 9th of March, 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, hello. Happy belated International Women's Day.
And to you.
Yay, the tech sisterhood.
Yes. And as a result, we've kind of kicked the boys out today, and we're going to do an interesting show to spite them, I guess we'll say. So the first thing we want to discuss is, interestingly enough, is Android phones. And you have a very interesting piece about Android phones and what happens to them over time.
So, yeah, this is some interesting data. Actually, I can't claim to be the first finder of this. So, Andrew, a site called Bank My Cell, get it? And the data was picked up on Cult of Mac. This data basically looked through the relative depreciations of iPhones and Android devices. Mm-hmm. And it's actually genuinely very interesting. The kind of TLDR version of it is flagship Android devices lose their value twice as fast as an iOS device, as an iPhone. So just to break that down a little bit, in the first year, as soon as you drive an iPhone off the lot, it loses 23.45%, actually. I'm being a bit facetious. It's over the first year. You know, day one to day 365, it loses to 23.45% of its value.
Okay.
By year two, the total depreciation of value is 45.46%.
So this is on an iPhone.
That's on an iPhone, exactly.
After 2 years, say.
After 2 years, it's
about half.
Correct. It's lost about 45-odd%.
Okay.
But for an Android device, it loses 45%. 45.18% to be specific, at the end of its first year.
Okay.
So, i.e., an Android device loses its value twice as fast as a iOS device, which is very interesting. And then, you know, they went into more data over 4 years. So tracking over 4 years, iPhone trading value decline is a steady decline, losing between 23.45% to 33.09% year on year. But in 2 years, the average Android flagship phone would lose 71.41% of its original value.
Wow. Okay. So I think the first piece of this conversation, it would be why, and it feels like there's a couple of big reasons for that, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to also highlight one other thing, that when we're talking about the depreciation of Android devices, we're not talking about random, you know, devices with Android installed on them.
Right.
The data tried to compare as much as is possible, like for like, you know, $700 plus flagship Android devices.
Okay. So, yeah, we're not talking about like the ones they sort of give away if you sign up for a new cell phone account at your provider or anything like that. We're talking about
anything like
overall.
That. No, these are, and I think I remember reading that actually the only thing that keeps the numbers anywhere near up is Samsung devices, i.e. the higher end devices.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, we were speculating before, and as far of about why this might be, and, you know, maybe some listeners can, you know, drop us a line and give us their opinions and thoughts and insights into this. My initial thought was basically build quality.
Mm-hmm.
Are the iPhones substantially better built than an Android device? Quite possibly. I think a couple of our colleagues also suggested maybe it's things like the level of updates and so on, and the the regularity of the updates.
That would be me. Partly the carrier, because some carriers get to decide what updates are released for what devices. So, for example, if I have an Android phone on AT&T and you have an Android phone on T-Mobile, it's possible that I might get an Android update to my phone, but you won't get it on your phone, even if they're the same phone, because T-Mobile said no and AT&T said yes. And aside from carriers deciding those things, there's also the cell phone makers themselves, the handset makers themselves. So Samsung may decide that this Android update goes out to all Samsung devices, but HTC might decide HTC devices don't get that one.
Right. Yeah, and this is, there's, people have always said, we've had this discussion a lot about Android, haven't we? There's benefits to the kind of less walled garden approach to Android, and the fact, you know, it's, and there's also downsides, and I think you've articulated one of those downsides pretty coherently. And, you know, the other issue, I've used Android devices before. I've got an iPhone, and it feels so. I don't know if the device feels, you know, physically more substantial. I don't think you could really make a worthwhile comment on that, but it certainly feels like a device I'm happier to use for longer.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of a kind of 18-month cycle, Android devices really feel like they're on their last legs to me. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate, you know, this iPhone I'm using now, I've only had for, what, 6 months or something? And so obviously it's still going to feel pretty new and robust. But, you know, I'm not even using a top-end iPhone. I've got a XR, mm-hmm. which I love. And it feels to me like I would happily use that device for 2 years or so. And we're seeing this in the, we're seeing this more and more, that people are just not moving on from their iPhones as quickly as Apple actually would like.
Oh, sure. I think part of that is cost. I mean, not everybody has $1,000 plus a year to put out on a phone. But also, the evolution of it, like, there's a lot of evolution happening now and not revolution. There's not necessarily a massive brand new feature coming to every single phone every single year, right? So, you know, first we got Siri, you know, we got, you got a phone with a camera that could shoot video, and then the next one was Siri, and then the next one was Touch ID, and then Apple Pay, and then, like, there was always some big new thing that you could do with this new phone that you couldn't do before. And aside from Face ID, which we got with the iPhone 10, we've had camera upgrades, but it's still a camera. Like, we're not getting a brand new feature to that camera, which was the big thing with the 11s, which is part of why I was so excited to upgrade. So I think that's part of why people are holding on to them longer. There's less I have to upgrade so that this fundamental thing that I want to do with my phone is a possibility that wasn't a possibility before. So I think
and presumably that's also part of the fact that there are substantial upgrades, would that kind of help them retain value? Because, you know, over a 2 year period, mm-hmm. most of your, if you think about it, like, over a 2 year period, your iPhone is going to, like, most iPhones that Apple is selling officially and properly are kind of going to do a job over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that also contributes to them maintaining their value.
I certainly think so.
I don't have the answer.
Right. But it's up to Apple when those system updates come out, and it's up to Apple when handsets stop getting them. And a three-year-old phone is still absolutely going to get the newest version of iOS, whatever that may be. Even sometimes a four-year phone, depending on how big the switch was between models, that break comes sometimes, you know, quite a ways back when it comes to a new version of iOS. So, like, the one we get this summer is probably going to run on, you know, the iPhone 12, we're going to call it, you know, that comes out this fall. It'll run on last year's, which is the 11. And then it'll run on the 10S, and it will probably run on the 10. And if it's going to run on the 10, it will probably run on the 8, which means if you bought an iPhone 8 a few years ago, you will probably get iOS 14 this year. And maybe it will have some limited functionality. That's usually the way that they make sure people stay up to date, is you can run iOS 14, but there's these couple, three things that, you know, older phones don't necessarily have the horsepower to do. And we can...
Yeah.
And but you can still get the latest version with all the security updates and all the other features. But, you know, maybe one of these new things doesn't work as well or doesn't work at all. But you still get the latest OS. Yeah.
And all of that helps make, it seems, must contribute to the iOS devices being more valuable for longer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what the point is, always check the trade-in value of your device.
Absolutely. So
here endeth today's lesson.
Yes, thank you for coming to Charlotte's TED Talk. The other thing that we wanted to talk about today is an interesting thing that, Charlotte, you noticed last week.
Well, yes, this is a funny one. So we've talked about it on the show before. Excuse me. That there are often not very generous profiles of and previews and reviews of, yes, Apple TV Plus shows. It tends to be normally when they come out, before they've just come out, like their previews.
Yeah.
And
you get to see an episode or maybe two, yeah, or three and form an opinion.
And on some cases, it's true, the show has sucked. And in other cases, viewers have actually rather enjoyed them. You know, people, I'll go back to it, people thought the previews and reviews of the morning show were horrible. And the show really, yes, wasn't horrible. It was flawed in some places. It was really good in other places. But it wasn't as horrible as you would believe if you just read the reviews. So there is new shows coming to Apple TV Plus, and one called Amazing Stories from Steven Spielberg. And then it was on Wednesday, I was reading a couple of links to review, you know, stories about the reviews, and I tried to read the original reviews and they'd gone. It was very odd.
Oh.
So I reported on this, and you know, there's always the tinfoil hat thing, right? Let's deal with that first. People would be like, oh, it's a rubbish review. Apple stopped it.
Yeah.
Haven't quite worked out in my head how Apple would stop a bad review. But anyway, the reviews were well and truly gone. They weren't on the websites that originally had published them. You couldn't find them even in the Wayback Machine. They were gone. Then, on Friday, they magically reappeared.
Oh.
Yes. And as far as I can tell, it was the same piece of content. And so what this all did, one, it's quite funny. And it was rather bizarre to watch the kind of appearing and disappearing and reappearing reviews. That was quite, you know, it was, yes, quite odd to see. And then what it led to me to think really is that this was these two publications that had put those reviews out on Wednesday or whatever had broken an embargo. There's, you know, for getting the right, you know, the luxury, if you like, of previewing some content, in this case, an Apple TV Plus show. Mm-hmm. Normally with any company, there is a date agreed, which says, if you see this content, that's great. That's fine. We're happy for you to preview it. Mm-hmm. But you cannot write that preview or publish it. Sorry, yeah, you cannot publish that preview, right, before this agreed date. And, right, normally there's a time on it as well.
Yeah. And if, you know, if you've ever noticed that all of a sudden all the reviews for a movie come out on the same day, this is why. Because it's not just, bingo, TV shows. It's,
or indeed,
yeah,
you know, it actually happens to physical products as well. If you noticed, all the iPhone reviews appear on the same day, for, yeah, instance. Right. So that, and it's clearly what had happened, as far as I can tell, is that these two publications, one was called CBR, one was called The Spool, had accidentally, I'm sure there was no malice intended, broken that embargo, and the Apple Press Office, for once in their life, contacted someone.
What?
Sorry, this is just a personal gripe of mine. And they're all lovely people in the Apple Press Office, obviously. And, you know, contacted the publication, say, you've broken the embargo, please take them down to the agreed date.
Right.
And it appears as soon as the agreed date was arranged, which looks like Friday, which was the day the show went live, mm-hmm, the first episode, they returned. So you can check them out. I've linked to them a couple of different times over on the macobserver.com. But Kelly.
Yes.
Kelly. They weren't the only bad reviews that Apple TV Plus content got this week.
Well, I think the first question was going to be, when the reviews reappeared, were they the same review? And it sounds like the answer is yes.
Yeah, as far as I can tell. That's why I don't think there's any conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
I don't think
so. It was the the same uncharitable review, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah, no, they weren't very good.
I pulled out
some of the key quotes up on the site if you want to have a read of them. But then also the much maligned, troubled release of the Apple TV Plus film The Banker.
Yes.
Has arrived. Didn't get nice reviews either. Now, I think in some of the... I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it seems to me actually some of the criticisms are quite valid. Apparently, it looks like, you know, despite the fact it's actually a story about three African-Americans who are, you know, trying to set up a bank. I won't go into the whole story, but it's Samuel L. Jackson is one of the stars in it. The other is Nick Holt. And it seems that it's the story kind of got shifted towards Nick Holt, the white guy, as opposed to the real central characters in the story. I'm not sure. I'll watch it. If that's true, and it sounds like it is, that's, you know, that's a legitimate criticism.
Indeed.
To kind of muck up a story like that in that way, and to be, you know, quite so inaccurate in your portrayal. Other stuff, it seems like it's just another little have a dig at Apple for the sake of Apple, get off our lawn kind of vibe.
Well, and the thing, so for people who listen to A Star on the Show regularly, read the site regularly, the name of a movie called The Banker may sound familiar to you. And part of that is because it's had a bit of controversy itself. So,
yes, aside from... If you have a look through the TMM archives, Andrew and I have, I think, catalogued every time the show was coming, not coming, launched, not launched, delayed.
Yeah, it's been quite a while that this has... that this one's been coming, and it's had some controversy, like I said. I'll have a link to some of that in the show notes. You'll see it there. It's interesting to see. Now, one thing that I actually, I have very mixed feelings about Amazing Stories getting bad reviews. And part of that is because I watched the original show back in the day when it was on TV, when things were only on once a week. And if you wanted it, if you wanted to watch it at a time when it was not on, you had to use this dark magic that Charlotte knows nothing about called a VCR. And and watching those, they were fun and they were interesting at the time. And so I'm sad to see that there really aren't any good reviews of Amazing Stories is triumph, what I thought would be a triumphant return. And I was very excited when we heard about it at the Showtime event that Apple held, when Steven Spielberg came out and said, yeah, like, we're bringing back Amazing Stories. That sounded really great, given the kinds of things that you can do on a TV show today that you couldn't do when it came out the first time, with regards to, like, special effects and, you know, making things happen, and what kind of stuff is available to a person making a television show. So on the one hand, I'm sad that Amazing Stories came back and maybe shouldn't have. But I'm also sort of happy because this sort of makes Apple more of what we'll call, like, an actual media production company where they can all be winners. I mean, I think that seems like a pretty fair assessment.
Sure, and of course, that's right. There's been a lot of rubbish that Netflix has produced. There's a lot of rubbish that Amazon Prime Video has produced.
NBC, ABC, CBS, like, TV networks don't always make great shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's always felt a little bit to me like media people and the media industry is what it had a little bit of a get off my lawn approach to Apple doing TV.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to drop a little public service announcement in as well.
Yes.
So if you own, excuse the handbrake turn here, but I think it would be interesting to our listeners. If you have a third generation iPad Air and it has randomly gone blank, Apple has now agreed that it will fix that for free. You can take it to an Apple authorized service provider or an Apple retail store, or you can do the kind of mail-in service version of dropping it in. So you can, we'll put a link to my story about it and which will have also the details from the Apple you know, official product page. But basically, if you have an iPad Air that was a third generation and it went blank and you didn't know why, you know, you do not have to pay for that repair.
That's good news.
So, yeah, between March 2019 and October 2019, that's when the affected devices were manufactured.
Mm-hmm. So, if you have an iPad Air from last year, you should check into it. So,
this can happen. The specific term Apple uses, the program covers affected iPad Air third generation devices for 2 years after the first retail sale of the unit. So, yep. It's worth checking out if you have one of those devices.
It is indeed. And we're going to call it there. Thank you for the PSA, Charlotte. And thank you for being with me today.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad to have you here. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.